Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and today I am joined by our guest, Brian Compton, Chantel Webb Candler, and Brandon Williams. We are talking about HBCUs, and this is a show that we have been waiting for. Welcome to our guests.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Brandon, we'll start with you.
Sure. My name is Brandon Williams. Everybody know me as P-Nut. I'm a class of 2010 from the Tuskegee University. My major was biology. I have a master's in sports psychology, as well as I'm a member of not one, but many organizations. I'm a member of Alpha Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. I'm also a member of Alpha Omega Service Fraternity Incorporated. I also am a Trojan. Fight on.
Thank you, Brandon. Would you prefer to be called Peanut?
That's fine. Peanut's fine.
Okay. We'll go with that. And Chantel?
Chantel Webb Candler, born and raised in San Diego, California. Class of 2008 of the illustrious Clark Atlanta University. I was a political science major. I also attended the University of San Diego. My paralegal there in the realm of business litigation. I currently am in a graduate program to be finished, hopefully in the next year or so. A little bit about me, I am a paralegal. I wear many hats. I also have a nonprofit that specializes in HBCU advocacy here in San Diego, California. We've been running strong as a group since the end of 2014, but we've been a nonprofit since 2018. I am also the team market owner of a professional basketball team called the San Diego Guardians. We're going into our inaugural season in about 3 weeks within the basketball league, which is the first professional sports league for men in the country that was founded by a Black woman. So I can explain a little bit more because we actually have an initiative that's going that benefits HBCUs. So I can talk about that a little bit later on in the segment.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Chantel. Brian?
Well, I'm Brian Compton, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. I'm a Tiger by travels. I attended Northeast Louisiana from 1989 to 1992, where I then became the ultimate Gremlin Tiger, where I transferred there from spring 92. And left in spring of 95. I later went on to become an entrepreneur. I am currently an owner of All That and some Greek Warehouse and Showroom, where we specialize in D9 fraternity and sorority wear, as well as carry the line and apparel for all the historically Black college and universities by being a Grambling Tiger. I was put into that particular facet of the business through also being a member of Phi Beta Sigma Incorporated, which you'll hear that next week on the segment that we just did previously. But that's how I pretty much got intertwined and into what I do in regards to my HBCU travels and my HBCU Black experience. So hopefully we can help you guys today answer some questions that you have in regards to our great universities that all three of us have attended.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brian. So let's just talk about the weather really quick because we're on Zoom right now. So I don't know what's happening where you guys are, but we've been having some very temperamental weather. It's, 40, 45 degrees here. And then the next day it's 18 degrees. What's it doing where you are?
Yeah, we're at 61 here in San Diego. It's temperamental as it was a little cloudy today, and based on my forecast, it looks like we have 80% chance of rain tomorrow. So, I'm so excited.
No,
see how California people see how we get so excited about rain because we never get it.
Right.
Oh no, that was pure sarcasm. I am not excited. I'm excited at the fact that I'm working from home, and school is from home, so I don't have to go out in it. But Californians, because it doesn't rain here, a little drop mixed with that oil that's on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A
catastrophe real quick.
Can't forget the oil. Yeah, Christina knows she stayed down there before, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I lived in California for 12 years, And I mean, you have, like you said, one little drop of rain and it's a potential disaster. Like, it just shut down.
People like literally.
Oh, I can't go because it's raining. I'm like, you can't go. Like, you have to, your life has to still go on. And yeah, crazy. Raincoats and rain boots and all of that stuff. You don't see that here in Alaska.
What's that?
Right, exactly.
I don't know what those are.
Exactly. The worst freeway, especially on the 405. You don't not want to be in the rain on the 405 and the 110 freeway.
At all. Negative.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, let's get into our conversation about the HBCUs. I am very excited about this. And if you can just say your name when you're speaking, and so our listeners can just start to get familiar with your voice. But I'll just open with the first question, I guess the obvious question, what does HBCU stand for? Who would like to take it? Chantel?
Go ahead.
Historically Black Colleges and Universities.
Okay, there we have the first question answered. So what's the big deal about HBCUs from your perspective? Like, what's the significance?
So for me, the significance of HBCUs is that not long ago, contrary to popular belief, when African Americans were enslaved, we were not able to read, let alone get an education. So it was pretty much a death sentence if we were caught with a book in our hand or trying to seem any type of educated or articulate or anything of that matter. So HBCUs were established. Some of the first were actually established prior to the Civil Rights War ending, or excuse me, the Civil War ending. Mm-hmm. And then after the Civil War ended and the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, there was a slew in 1865 of HBCUs that were established, but there were specifically three HBCUs that were established prior to 1865.
Okay.
Like I said, essentially, for me, in my opinion, the significance of them is that they were the, I guess you would say, birthright or birthplace of African Americans being able to receive an education, because essentially there were some HBCUs, you had different ones at different stages. So there were some that actually had elementary and secondary, like high school and then post-high school education, all coupled in one, and then they went on to the collegiate level and stuff like that. So they were essentially where all of our, what I like to say, all of our pioneers were educated for the most part. I mean, you know, when you hear HBCUs, you think about Martin Luther King, you think about Katherine Johnson and all the women that were depicted in Hidden Figures. You think about, oh God, W.E.B. Du Bois, I mean, the list goes on. So all of our idols, essentially, that we look up to, whether it be the Civil Rights Movement, inventors, et cetera, they came out of HBCUs. So I think that that is a very important thing to know. When you have some times that you hear people trying to discredit HBCUs, you're discrediting our history and our idols and our forefathers in this movement of civil rights and et cetera, Black excellence.
Yes.
You better go on with that history, I see.
Yeah, she nailed it.
You better come on with that history. But I mean, realistically too, HBCUs gave us people of color, and not just us people of color, people of diversity, a chance. Mm. And a chance to get educated and a chance to move on within the future and a chance to go do great things. I mean, let alone we have, you know, from our earliest HBCUs, which is Cheney, which was founded in Pennsylvania. They were founded prior to the Civil War. So just imagine a Black college founded before the Civil War had started. And with the earliest HBCU, I believe it was Mississippi Valley was the last HBCU to be founded. But, you know, you have great pioneers, even in sports, where a lot of our athletes couldn't attend, for example, the University of Alabama, couldn't attend definitely University of Georgia, some of these other predominantly white institutions for football. They had a chance to go to Grambling State University and thrive. Andy Robinson was the most pioneer coach in Black college history. He let alone educate his athletes to not just propel his sports, but to propel in the classroom as well as academia. And of course, we have different cultures at our Black colleges. Each one of our campuses have a different culture. Each one of our campuses have a legacy. Like, for example, Tuskegee, we were the first Black college to actually have a veterinary medicine program. So we graduated some of the top vets in the country, about 70%. Of course, we have the Tuskegee Airmen. We have, you know, didactics with NASA, and the list goes on and on.
Okay, thank you, Peanut. Brian, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Their presentations were both extraordinary. I mean, they answered a lot of the meat. And I think another thing that we just addressed, I mean, it's right there in the abbreviations, HB, Historically Black. And the fact that these were institutions at the time, because of the times that we as Afro-Americans had specifically for us, because those were the only opportunities at the time set aside for us to get an education. And the thing about it is the fact that that was our culture. The education driven was for us because we were shorthanded. I mean, even now, the HBCU still haven't got the full representation that they should in comparison to other colleges and universities. And that's not a knock against them because of world events going on around. And HBCUs now are getting, I would say, due just attention. I mean, it's still a lot that we're deserving of, not because we just feel we're special. It's just the fact of the type of product that we put out as far as graduates and the changes that HBCU graduates and attendees make in our communities and our surrounding areas, wherever we are fortunate enough to be planted. And that's what we represent. That's what we're shooting for. That's what we stand for. So great answers, you guys.
I'm pretty sure we have all seen it's not a meme, but more of a stat chart of that HBCUs are responsible for 75% of Black PhDs, 46% of Black business executives, 50% of our engineers, 80% of our Black federal judges in the United States of America, 85% of our doctors, 50% of attorneys, 75% of Black military officers. And me living here in San Diego, I've been blessed to meet, oh my God, probably all of them. And most of them come out of Savannah State, at least that are here stationed in San Diego. 40% of our Black dentists, 50% of pharmacists, and 75% of veterinarians going to what Peanut spoke about, to ski.
Wow. I'm going to need a copy of those stats so I can post them on
our email page.
Thank you. Did you always know that you would go to HBCU, or was there a point that you made that decision?
No. Going to a Black college from California was not my first choice. Growing up in LA, and from my time around the 2000s, either wanted to go to USC, UCLA, mm-hmm. Stanford, Berkeley, or some of the Cal State schools.
Yeah.
So going to a Black college was not really my first choice. But what changed my perspective was attending the Black College Expo in 2001. So I was a sophomore, freshman that year. I attended the Black College Expo all 4 years of high school. It was free, and I was part of the Black Student Union at my high school, which was 99% Hispanic. So I was one of 15 African-Americans in my class. Three of us attended Black colleges. But, you know, my senior year, I walked in with my transcripts, my senior portfolio, and Tuskegee was the first one. I walked up, handed them my stuff, and was like, oh, you're in. You're good. So I started, you know, got accepted to other HBCUs, but I didn't know about Black colleges. And see, back in the day, BET used to show the Black College game. So they showed the Tuskegee Morehouse Classic. And of course, you watch the Bayou Classic every year. It was from there on, it was between going to Cal State Northridge or going to Tuskegee. And I talked to my grandmother, was like, go back to the South. Go learn about your roots.
Yes. That's where I met. Chantel, how about you?
So I have a very interesting story. So When I was in school, I was in an AVID program, and my best friend in school, her name was Chantel. My name is Chantil. And so we were always swearing that we would go off to college together, et cetera, et cetera. And in our AVID class, we had to do a research project on schools, like based on our interests, so where we would want to go to school based on our interests. And so it was her idea. She was like, we're going to go to this Black school called Clark. And I was like, oh, and she was like, yeah, I think it's in Georgia. So we went and did like, of course, so I was going to save it to the end, but this is in seventh grade, right? So this is late 90s. So we had AOL, you know, dial up, and we found Clark University. However, it was Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. We looked at the pictures and we were like, nah, that's not it. And so I think we typed in probably, because I think that's what she said, oh, I think it's in Georgia. So we either typed in Georgia or we typed in Black or something. And then that's when the lovely Clark Atlanta University popped up. And at the time, and still do, one of my loves and passions is writing. And anybody that really knows Clark Atlanta, we have an extensive mass media arts program. And so that drew me to it. And there I was in the seventh grade at Lemon Grove Middle School at the age of 12. And I said I was going to Clark Atlanta. And I did not depart from that. When I was in high school, I was also a part of, well, ours was the African American Student Union, but same purpose as BSU. My class of 2004 was roughly 980 students. 33 of us were Black. We had only a few Black teachers at my high school, but we were fortunate to have a Black assistant principal, and she had four children. Her oldest, her son, was at went to Howard. Her daughter went to Spelman. Her middle daughter was at PSC at the time, and then her youngest daughter was the same age as me, and she ended up going to SC. However, so my first trip was to Fisk University, and my mom tried to kind of push that off because it was a small school, and I was like, that's not where I'm going. So I knew at 12, and I stuck to it to go to Clark Atlanta. And then we used to have the Gold Coast Classic here in San Diego, so that my senior year, I was a part of the pageant, the scholarship pageant, a little stage fright. And Clark Atlanta and Stillman actually were that year. So then I really got to see out of the first time what Clark Atlanta culture was. But yeah.
Thank you. And Brian, you went to an HBCU and then you went to another university. Can you share a little bit about what led you to those experiences?
Well, my travels were detoured. My whole experience was, my mother was an educator. She was a teacher and principal, and she graduated from Grambling State University. Her father, my grandfather, he attended Southern University of Baton Rouge. That was an in-house rival right there from the jump, because Grambling State and Southern University are like two of the biggest HBCU college rivals in the game. When we get to Peanut and them school and Clark and all them, that's a whole nother can of worms, because they got rivals too. That's like major. So for me growing up, I was exposed to Grambling State, really more or less Grambling State, because of my mother. And so that's all I would hear was Grambling. Growing up, she graduated from Grambling. My mother and father are both originally from the Deep South, from Evergreen and Bunky, Louisiana, which are sticks. No disrespect, but they were in the woods. And so just by me going back and forth to the South from California, where I was born and raised, and traveling to the South back and forth, I mean, I was just introduced to the lifestyle. I just fell in love with the South. And now to speed up to high school, I went to a predominantly white high school in Cerritos, California, and there was a handful of us Afro-Americans there. And I graduated. And even then, I had no exposure to HBCU knowledge other than my mom and going back and forth to the South and experiencing for myself and seeing like the Grambling and Southern Gang, the Bayou Classic. So I was pretty much just programmed like that, but it was voluntarily, because by me kind of just knowing that, that was it. So when I graduated, I only applied to one school. I knew I was going to Grambling. That was it. Like, I didn't even know about other HBCUs, really, to be honest with you, until later in the game. I mean, all I knew was Grambling State. That's where I'm going. I saw step shows. I saw Greek life. Fortunately, we still don't know to this day, other than it was God's plan, but I did not get in. And I'm telling you, I had the grades and everything. And so that's where the Northeast portion came in. I ended up attending Northeast Louisiana from 1989 to spring of 92, where I fell in love with that campus. That was a predominantly white campus, but that is also where I was introduced to the Greek fraternity and sorority lifestyle, which I later, on that yard, I joined Phi Beta Sigma Incorporated. And that was the introduction to the fraternal side. And then in spring 91, I finally was able to transfer to Grambling State in the spring of 92. And the rest was history. I never looked back. I stayed on the yard. I'm, you know, a Tiger to this day. My mom's a Tiger. And I shared an HBCU experience with our fellow guests as well, Brandon and Chantel, because we're a family. Even though we didn't all go to the same colleges, just by us being attendees of HBCU colleges, there's like a mutual respect for the experience that we all endeavored going on these different campuses. So when I tell you, like, it's unique, that's my travel. That's how I ended up. Grambling State for life on mine.
Thank you. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get deeper into this conversation. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between the Black Awareness Association of Juno and KTOO. I am your host, Christina Michelle, and today I am joined here by Brian Compton, Brandon, aka Peanut Williams, and Chantel Webb Candler. And we're discussing historically Black colleges and universities, also known as HBCUs. So, Brian, before we went to break, you shared a little bit about your experience and how you got to Grambling, and you mentioned that you attended Northeast as well. But can you tell us about your experience between those two schools?
Okay, yeah. So I initially attended Northeast Louisiana University, which is located in Monroe, Louisiana. So I was in Northern Louisiana, which is up top. And Northeast Louisiana, at the time I attended, I'm assuming it probably still is too, as they didn't change the name to ULM, but it was a predominantly white college. There were a handful of Blacks there, and nothing to knock the school for that. The education there was good, but attending Northeast, there was something that was missing for me as an Afro-American man, especially coming from California, the big city, quote unquote, to a smaller town, and then a Southern environment and all the elements that coincide with that, coming from the West to the South. And there's definitely a different vibe if you ever visit some of the Southern states in regards to the West Coast. So adapting to that, it was different. So even the in comparison to attending Grambling and attending Northeast, the curriculum, the attention from the teachers, the size of the classes, the university itself, the sizing, the opportunity that was offered at Northeast versus Grambling State, it was prevalent. Like, it was night and day in the sense that by Northeast being a larger university and getting better funding and things of that nature, especially back then, we talk in the late 80s, early 90s, but you can imagine back then for Grambling State, it was a bigger challenge. So we speed forward. Now I leave the predominantly white college and I attend Grambling State University, which is a predominantly Black college. And I could immediately feel the difference. One, I was surrounded by people that looked like me everywhere, all on the campus, which made a difference. It was for me, it was a little more welcoming. Now, you know, is this the true view of how life is for a Black person in perspective of how we live in the population? No, but it was good to be at an institution that was specifically focused on educating Afro-Americans. And you can tell even with the class sizes, the teachers, a lot of the teachers at the university were actually either Black attendees or graduates from other HBCU schools. So they knew the struggle and the challenge that you may have had just to even get on a college campus as an Afro-American. I mean, let's not even, you know, that's a whole nother show alone, because at that time it was graduate, you try to get a job. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of options for Afro-Americans then. So to be at a Black college, it was an honor and a privilege, because even when it came to the teaching, when I got to Grambling, my teachers knew me by name and they made sure if I was failing, it wasn't no, you just get an F and nobody care. No, they was pulling you to the side. They was in your face. They were very adamant about making sure that us as Afro-American students succeeded in our journey to graduate. Am I saying that that wasn't offered at Northeast? What I'm saying is the education was different just because of the college campus and the focus. Because now I'm at a historically Black college, which their whole goal is to make sure Afro-Americans have the same opportunity, if not better, to be successful in this world once they leave this campus. And so you could immediately see that focus from attending a larger college into a smaller institution, but as focused, their focus was making sure that Brian Compton got the best experience in education while he attended that campus. That same experience, that's pretty much universal. And that's what makes the Black experience in attending the HBCU so special, I'm sure, in some facets.
And B, just to piggyback on your experience, my advisor called my mom to let my mom know that I was messing up in classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that phone call at 8 o'clock a.m., which is 6 o'clock L.A. time. And my mom was like, stop messing up in school. You know, you paid for school. This is not free. Mm. I was like, you're right.
Yep.
But, you know, that's how it was.
And see, my advisor was, or shall I say, my mother basically solicited her number to my advisor and solicited him reaching out to her in case anything went wrong. Honestly admit, because everybody has their stories, I was one. I still to this day can't pinpoint what went on in my head that I decided to stop going to class. But everything that Brian said, yes, they will. Whether you're sick or not, they will show up to that door. And especially if you're staying at a dorm, they will pull you aside if you live off campus. And at CAU, depending on the teacher and the day, class at 8 o'clock, 7:59, that door is locked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, discipline. Discipline, so, and accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I was fortunate that there were a couple of my professors that said, no, you learned this lesson because you messed up. And there was one that said, I'm going to let you take this exam. And it was an exam that I aced, even though I hadn't been in class. But because of my attendance, she said, you know, I can't give you an A. And so she gave me a B. And I took that as my lesson. I got reamed when I came home. And my parents were like, we paid for the semester out of pocket. And this is what you're going to do? Or you're going to take loans now. And upon graduation, we will figure out how much of those loans we will pay back. But this one semester, oh, you're paying that back, Jack. And that's what I had to do.
Ooh-wee.
Yes.
The struggle, yes, to stay in school.
Yeah, yes, they know you by your name. Mm-hmm. They don't know you by a student ID number. You know, I don't know how many PWI students can easily have access to their university's president, but at HBCU, that is a real thing.
Yep.
Wow.
Right? Amen. President at Clark Atlanta would be more than happy to give out his cell phone number to anybody that asks and say, text me.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I co-sign that.
Do you have to be Black to attend an HBCU?
No.
Okay.
I'll piggyback off of that. No. No, even to going back to 1865 when Atlanta University was established and founded, we had white students and students of all backgrounds from the jump. Unlike other schools and institutions, we don't need to brag about our diversity. We don't need to meet certain quotas and caps of our diversity. HBCU has always been diverse, and a lot of the white students and other students that attended HBCUs were right there with us marching and incidents and getting arrested for our rights.
Yeah.
So contrary to popular belief, we've had diversity of non-Black students since the 1900s. Imagine a white student in 1870 going off to college with Black kids. Your people don't want you.
Mm-hmm.
Family. So no, not at all.
Okay. Piggyback off of Chantel, there's historical records. We had Japanese students in 1901 taking pictures with our students on campus. Mm. Japanese students in 1901 in Tuskegee, Alabama. So you don't have to be African American or Black to attend HBCU.
What do you think a student who is not Black would have to gain from attending an HBCU? You've already mentioned so much in terms of the discipline and the accountability and the more personalized educational experience. But would you add anything else to that for someone, say like one of our listeners is thinking about suggesting an HBCU to their child, or they themselves are looking at or considering attending? What do you think that they would have to gain?
I mean, for one, the attention that the prospect is going to get by attending a HBCU outweighs probably everything right there. Like you said, you can't get around the accountability piece, because that's one thing that these are known for on a big scale, is they care about your child graduating, if anything. You know, there's no color line. We welcome all races, creed, and colors to HBCU. So it's definitely going to be a game changer for any attendee, especially if they have the experience like me to maybe attend a predominantly white college and then transfer. But for those who are interested, it's like anything else, I would say, you know, do your homework. Look them up online. You know, there's so many avenues with information now for you to check out. You know, all the colleges normally got Facebook pages, Instagram pages. You know, you can Google the school that you may be interested in. And I'm pretty sure it won't be hard to find any attendees if you really look at any of the alumni chapters and things of that nature. So, you know, that would be my advice to them. That's what they may experience different than attending a more known college, in a sense.
Thank you, Brian.
And also, just to piggyback too, there are like two or three HBCUs who are not, which are non 99% African American. They're majority Caucasian. So, but really? Well, they have a few Black students on that campus. So,
okay,
it's almost the same thing. Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me about STEP shows. Whenever you see Black colleges and universities featured in TV shows, one of the things that they always highlight are the STEP shows. What's the significance of those, and have you ever participated in one?
We're going to take that one. y'all want me to get jump on? Go ahead, P. I know you didn't got your step on.
I personally, I've never stepped. I'm not a stepper. I am a stroller. But attending step shows is like it's like going to a family reunion. Mm-hmm. You know, we have many organizations who practice. Some practice all year long, or whatever case may be, just for one step show, and that is for bragging rights. So, for example, I know Tuskegee. If you win the homecoming step show, yeah, bragging rights for the whole year, for the whole year. And then you might get recognized nationally. You might get recognized regionally. So it really all depends on, you know, your organization and college and region. But it's a huge part. Everybody's having fun. You get dance breaks. I mean, and, you know, you get some food and libations, right? So I mean, you can just have a good time.
So is the stepping a part of being in a fraternity? Or is that separate?
I mean, no, the stepping, I can't tell you the year. I'm not going to be a historian and say when the first step show took place, but what I can say is that was another facet of the HBCU and fraternity experience that attracted me as well. I knew that I was going to Grambling, and I knew that I was going at that time pledge a fraternity. And so being exposed to seeing the step teams and things over time growing up, they're connected, you know, and like Pina said, depending on where you are, like I knew the year that we crossed in our fraternity with that spring 91, we had assembled a step team and we were traveling all around. But anyway, that year we had a good step team. We were taking a lot of first and second places all around that particular region. Like Pina said, it's fun. It's discipline though, because you got to practice hours. I mean, we would practice like months for step shows. It's a display If not just representing your organization, you representing the school you coming from and that you stepping for, because that's how they label it. You know, they'll be like, oh, this is Phi Beta Sigma, Kappa Kappa chapter from Northeast Louisiana, or Xi chapter at Grambling State. You guys are broke down by chapters, by organization. The Alphas challenging the Sigmas, those bragging rights, that peanut address, ain't nothing like it.
And honestly, too, I can't speak of the 70s, but from the 80s and 90s, stepping was a major thing. Like, fraternities and sororities were featured on national television shows. Like, there was, yeah. You know, the National Step Show was put on, and between the 80s and 90s, stepping was at its prime.
Yeah.
And are these steps passed down generationally, or are there new steps that can be made? Is there anything new, like, to the choreography? Or is this like traditional?
All the time. It's like Pina said, depending on where you are, instant transition from stepping to now strolling has become a vital part of the process, which is a little bit different than more or less the precision stepping that we were doing at Greek shows and stuff. It's kind of been transformed into more of a like a trendy dance type formation as well. But still keeping the principles of precision, unity, everybody being in place. Far as the choreograph that goes on with doing the step show, that's constant. I mean, you get a lot of step teams, they'll use steps from a previous show, but then they'll remix it and put in. You know that somewhere along the road, you're going to have to face this other studio. So you want to be as original and as fresh as you possibly can when you get out there and get ready to put your product on the stage. Like they said, depending on the level you on with your stepping, it could be a regional thing. You got organizations that take this on state levels. You got them that take it on to you can be featured in some of these major shows, because I remember one of the biggest shows was like Grambling State versus Southern, what they call the Bayou Classic. You had a big major step show that Friday night, you know, with organizations from all over Louisiana. And those were like the top teams that qualified all over Louisiana. They were battling all year to get that chance to make it to step on the stage at a Bayou Classic. And again, that's my experience. But Peanut, that's one of the things we may all have in common. Now, how they do it, where and when, that may differ, but the principle is all the same.
Okay.
Of course, the Greek shows during homecoming and during classics and stuff are off the chain. However, through the schools, just internally, we have, at least at Clark Atlanta, we have dorm wars, and the dorms have teams. So stepping literally ingrained in HBCU culture. So we have like homecoming, like for our homecoming, the step show was one of the last things on Saturday. So after the game and everything, everybody heads over to the step show and stuff like that. But at the head of homecoming week, in addition to a variety of other festivities and activities, acknowledgements, et cetera, we have our dorm wars where the dorms face off each other and who's the top dorm for the, you know, for the academic year and stuff like that. And they go just as hard. They have their calls, their signs, they nicknames, all of that.
I think for me, that would definitely be a part of what would entice me to attend an HBCU. I wish that it had even been, you know, on the table when I went to college. I went to Vanguard University in Costa Mesa. And so this experience that you all are describing, I'm envious. It sounds beautiful. On that note, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. To a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between the Black Awareness Association of Juno and KTOO. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and I have had the pleasure of having a conversation here today with Brian Compton, Shantiel Webb Candler, and Brandon Williams. We've been talking about HBCUs, and our panelists have shared so much information about their experiences, and I know that I found it very useful information, and we hope that you did too. As we close out our show today, can you guys let us know how we can get in touch with you, or if you have a social media platform you'd like to share to stay connected with the listeners, please do so.
Well, I'm Brian Compton. You can find me on Facebook under All That Ansum, spelled A-L-L-T-H-A-T-A-N-D-S-U-M. You can also use that same handle for Instagram. You can also Google us at All That Ansum, and that'll pull up our website, our store. If you're interested in any HBCU merchandise, we carry an array of articles from tracksuits, hats, beanies, scarves, you name it. Most of the predominantly Black colleges we do carry. We don't carry them all, but we carry a lot of the heavy hitters. So if you're online, definitely check us out on social media or like I said, Google All That Ansum. And you can also Google Grambling State University. That will pull up all the information from that great university. If you've heard something that may have interested you about Grambling State University, feel free to check out the website, apply for it. They do have an online program currently. I'm speaking as an attendee of Grambling State University. I am not speaking on behalf of the university directly, but if you need any information, by all means, just Google Grambling State University, and that will be able to lead you in the right direction and answer any questions you may have. And thanks for having me, Christine.
Of course, thank you, Brian.
Yes, this is Brandon Williams again. You can find me on LinkedIn, Brandon Williams Senior, professionally. I like to give up my LinkedIn. And also check out Tuskegee University and see what we have to offer. You can go to tuskegee.edu. So we have all of our programs from online to hybrid to on campus. And we're currently COVID safe and following the COVID platforms. So.
Excellent. Thank you.
Shantiel Webb Candler. You can also find me on LinkedIn under Shantiel Webb Candler. My email address, if you would like to contact me via email, is my first name. So CHAUNTEALWC@gmail.com. Clark Atlanta University on Instagram is at CAU1988. You can also find Clark Atlanta on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and I believe on Snap as well. I'm not really a Snapchatter. I do serve as our national historian, so I'm constantly in meetings. Actually have one coming up soon for our board. So I'm our national historian of our alumni association. I also have, like I said, my nonprofit HBCU Alumni San Diego. I'm more than happy to answer questions. You don't have to live in San Diego. But of course, if you just happen to have some San Diego listeners, tap in with us. We're figuring out some stuff for pandemic fun. And then lastly, if you don't mind, I wanted to share about my basketball team. So the San Diego Guardians, we're kicking off our inaugural season in April, so in a few weeks. We have an initiative that I developed in the midst of the pandemic and everybody just kind of like the uncertainty as well as the social unrest with the heinous things that happened and continue to happen. It's been happening, right? But it seemed to have kind of maybe caught fire and not literally, but, picked up some steam.
Yes.
So we have an initiative called BAM. It's called Black Athletes Matter. And it's basically a platform saying that Black athletes, contrary to what many may or may not know, historically, professional Black athletes, have, for the most part, have always used their voice and their platform to further advance social, economical, racial injustices that go on in America. So BAM, Black Athletes Matter, is a platform saying that yes, your voice as a Black athlete does matter and you should not be minimized to your specific sport. So we have shirts that are right now being sold for the San Diego Guardians that just say Black is real simple, Black Athlete Matter in our logo. And Brian B, you actually might need to connect on that as well. But he has two focal points. So one, playing off of LeBron James when he was told to shut up and dribble. It's a play of words saying they don't just, and it's a scholarship for Black athletes. You don't have to be a basketball player. You don't have to just be male. It's for male and female athletes, no matter the sport. And it's basically called They Don't Just. It's a scholarship. And you're doing a 500-word essay, so it's nothing difficult, explaining outside of your sport, what do you do for your community? Because at the end of the day, as athletes, with that platform, you can be social justice transformer and changers. And we should all want to be the change that we want to see, no matter what profession you're in. The other focal point, is when we hear about athletes going to HBCU, Peanut tagged on it in terms of the history and the fact that our greatest athletes in the beginning, they couldn't go anywhere. So they were at HBCUs, right? So they were going into the leagues and stuff like that, the major professional leagues. And then somehow, some way, after affirmative action, the trend started to shift over to the predominant white institutions. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, HBCU sports suck. No, they didn't. They just went to the other side, kind of, right? So with that, one of the main things you hear nowadays is, oh, the facilities are this and the facilities are that. And that's because we're not getting the proper funding that we need. So the other side of BAM, the focal point on the other side is that we want to contribute at least $500, preferably more, but at least $500 to every HBCU that has athletic program. So of course, we are raised that first $500-$600 and it's going to Clark Atlanta first. Sorry, guys.
Good job.
But I'm actually going into a meeting tomorrow with Versity Supplier. We're going to sit down and discuss BAM, and they're going to end up creating their own design that they put on their platform and their design or their website, excuse me. So all the proceeds, none of the proceeds go to my basketball organization. They're all going into those two points.
Nice job.
Very nice. Thank you, Chantel, and thank you, Brian. Thank you, Peanut, again for this show and for being here today. I really appreciate it. Juno Afternoon airs every day, but the Black Awareness Association produces the show each Thursday. So we will be back again next week. And if you have missed any of our previous shows, please feel free to visit the website, ktoo.org, and you can look at the archives and watch all of the great shows that we've produced before today's show. If you have any questions about the Black Awareness Association of Juno, please feel free to email us at junobaa@gmail.com. And you can also head over to Facebook and find us there and like our page and interact and send any questions or comments that you have about our show there. Thank you. And until next week, take care.